Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Scent Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today's program on careers with an article which appeared in the New York Times business section on Saturday, the 7th of June. The title of this article is One-Time Federal Workers Flood Job Market with Gloomy Prospects. The article was written for the New York Times by Eileen Sullivan and Lydia DePillis. Drastic cuts to contracts and grants in academia make the search even harder. After Matt Minich was fired from his job with the Food and Drug Administration back in February, he did what many scientists have done for years after leaving public service. He looked for a position with a university. Mr. Minich, who is 38 years of age, was one of thousands swept up in the mass layoffs of probationary workers at the beginning of President Trump's second administration. The shock of those early moves heralded more upheaval to come as the Department of Government Efficiency, led by the tech billionaire Elon Musk, raced through agency after agency, slashing staff, freezing spending, and ripping up government contracts. In March, about 45 minutes after Mr. Minich accepted a job as a scientist in the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, the program lost its federal grant funding. Mr. Minich, who had worked on reducing the negative health effects of tobacco use, observed that he had the special honor of being dozed twice. "I'm doubly not needed by the federal government," he said in an interview. He is still out there hunting for work, and like hundreds of thousands of other former civil servants forced into an increasingly crowded job market, he is finding that drastic cuts to grants and contracts in academia, consulting, and direct services mean even fewer opportunities are available. Some states that were hiring another avenue for former federal government employees have now pulled back, and so too have the private contractors typically seen as a landing place. The situation is expected to worsen as more layoffs are announced, voluntary departures mount, and workers who were placed on administrative leave see the clock run out. With Mr. Musk's time in Washington now done, a fuller picture of just how completely he and Mr. Trump have upended the role of government is coming into view now. Federal tax dollars underpin entire professions directly and indirectly, and the cuts led by Mr. Musk's operation have left some workers with nowhere to go. In Washington, D.C. and the surrounding area, the disruption has the hallmarks of the collapse of an industrial cluster, not unlike the disappearance of manufacturing jobs in the Midwest during the 2000s, except this time it is moving at lightning speed. In January, just as Mr. Trump was taking office, the civilian federal workforce across the country had reached a post-World War II peak of 2.3 million, not including the Postal Service. Few agencies have publicly stated how many people have been fired or voluntarily resigned, but a rough count shows that federal agencies have lost some 135,000 jobs to firings and voluntary resignations, with another 150,000 in planned reductions. Contracted and grant-funded workers, which the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta estimated to be as many as 4.6 million people, are harder to track in official data. The first contractor layoffs began back in February with organizations that received funding from the U.S. Agency for International Development, such as Chemonix and FH 1360. As more grants and contracts that were under review across government are terminated, job cuts have gained steam. Booz Allen Hamilton, the sprawling consulting firm based in Northern Virginia that gets 98% of its revenue from the federal government, announced that it was cutting 7% of its 36,000-person staff. Even providers at Head Start, the lower-income preschool program, have issued layoff notices because funding has been in doubt. While the national labor market remains stable, job loss is starting to become notable in the capital region. Unemployment rates in the District of Columbia and most of its surrounding counties have been on the rise since December. The number of people receiving unemployment insurance has been elevated in Virginia and D.C. over the past several months. Job postings in Washington have dropped across the board, according to the hiring platform Indeed, including in opportunities for administrative assistance, human resources, and accounting. Local government agencies around Washington are hosting dozens of hiring events, and most of them are packed. Elaine Chalmers of Woodbridge, Virginia, was among 750 people who attended a recent resource fair in Arlington, Virginia, just outside of Washington. The event offered free consultation for updating resumes as well as professional headshots and workshops, including one on managing personal finances during a transition in employment. It was the fourth one she had attended in the month since she left the Agriculture Department, where she had worked for 20 years, most recently in the division that ensured equal access to grants for rural communities. She resigned in order to escape the stress and uncertainty created by new mandates, such as erasing words like equity and diversity from department communications. It just became almost a character question for myself, said Miss Chalmers, who is 53. I couldn't honorably stay. Like many of the federal workers who chose to take a deferred resignation or early retirement, one of the tools the administration has used to shrink the workforce, she is on leave and will be paid through September. It is a relief for her, she said, because she is the sole caregiver for her mother and her 15-year-old son. But the prospects do not look good for her. Ms. Chalmers said she expected to have to take a pay cut. She said she applied for more than 100 jobs in the week before the job fair and received several automated emails informing her that she did not get the position. For many government workers, career transitions can be especially daunting because their jobs are extremely specific, performing functions that do not exist in the private sector. For a lot of them, it's almost like starting from scratch, said Laura Moreno Davis, who is a spokesperson for WorkSource Montgomery, the workforce agency for Montgomery County, Maryland, just outside of D.C. They really have a wealth of experience and knowledge. How can we best use that? A new group formed by two former federal employees is trying to help people do that. How do you translate those skills that you have learned in the federal government that are so complex and seem to be so unique into something that can be communicated easily outside of the federal government, said Julie Cerquera, who is co-founder of the group, which is called Feds Forward. Ms. Sequeria's partner, Karen Lee, said that people who worked in federal disaster recovery and resilience jobs, for example, had expertise that could transfer to private sector work in contingency planning and supply chains. But it is not so simple for everyone. Chelsea Van Thoff, who is 33, is a public health veterinarian who focused on diseases that spread from animals to humans and from humans to animals, a niche job even in the government. A few weeks after the inauguration, the contract she worked under at the State Department was placed on hold for a 90-day review and ultimately terminated. Dr. Van Thoff immediately lost her health insurance and took on a housemate to cover her rent. Plans for the future changed, too, as she had been counting on public sector loan forgiveness to pay off her $250,000 in veterinary school debt, a prospect that now seems increasingly remote. She sometimes feels as though she is sending resumes into a void. I was just thankful when I got a rejection because it meant they saw my application, she said. Like others in the science field, including Mr. Minnis, she is looking for jobs outside the country. And in the meantime, she helped to form a support group of about 80 wildlife protection conservationists who are in similar predicaments. People working on government contracts are hit especially hard because they are not eligible for the deferred resignation plans, which are available to federal employees and cannot look forward to their pensions. Todd Frank of Westminster, Maryland, was given just a few minutes' notice before he was laid off as a technical writer on a contract with the Department of Homeland Security's Science and Technology Directorate, helping to get the appropriate gear out to military personnel in the field. Mr. Frank, who is 54, is now wrestling with whether or not to uproot his family to find a new job, which would come with steep trade-offs. His wife runs her own business, a licensed daycare out of their home. His teenage sons do not want to leave their high school, he said. Lately, he is looking at the family's budget for where to make cuts. Not being able to buy a suit for prom sounds like rich people problems, but you don't want to turn around and tell your kid, you can't do this or you can't do that, Mr. Frank said. Several states had advertised their eagerness to hire people laid off by the federal government in the early days of federal cuts. Back in March, Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania said that state would give hiring preference to former federal workers. Since that time, the state government has received more than 7,300 applications from people who said they had federal experience, his office said, and so far state agencies have hired 120 of them. But state jobs have gotten a lot more popular in recent months. Since March, former and current federal employees have sent in nearly 700 applications, California's Human Resources Office said. Some states are having their own budget problems, in part brought on by uncertainty around the continuation of federal funding. Alaska, Massachusetts, Indiana, Louisiana, and New Hampshire have all implemented hiring freezes. Public health agencies in Ohio and in Alaska have laid people off as grants were canceled. And a broad swath of universities have also paused new hires, including the University of California system, the University of Pennsylvania, and Emory University in Georgia. With the Trump administration's firings of scientists and grant cancellations from agencies, including the National Science Foundation and the National Institutes of Health, Science, and Consulting, have been hit especially hard, according to Indeed. Companies and nonprofits alike that help to evaluate whether federal programs were working, such as American Institutes for Research, have let go up to a quarter of their payrolls. Pero Sen, a research scientist in Cincinnati, was laid off in May along with most of the people in her office at the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. She worked on industrial hygiene, studying worker exposures that cause chronic health problems, and she visited Washington in May with her union to talk to members of Congress about the need to restore those jobs to the federal government. This was my dream job that I have been ripped from, she said in an interview. Ms. Sen and her colleagues work in such a specialized field that they are competing for very few available jobs, especially if they want to stay where they are. The job market right now is not amazing, said Ms. Sin, who is 29. Cincinnati is a very big city, and you've got suddenly some of the smartest people in this field all applying and competing for the exact same jobs at the same time. The next article that I would like to read for you today is written by Lauren Weber and appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 23rd of June. The title of this article is One Man's Quest to Get Job Hunters a Fair Shake. United States job hunters submit millions of online applications every year. Often they get an automatic rejection or no response at all, never knowing if they are even getting a fair shake from the algorithms that gatekeep today's job market. One worker, who is Derek Mobley, is trying to discover why. Mobley, an IT professional in North Carolina, applied for more than 100 jobs during a stretch of unemployment from 2017 to 2019, and for a few years after that. He was met with rejection or silence each time. Sometimes the rejection emails arrived in the middle of the night or within an hour of submitting his application. Mobley, who is now 50 years old, noticed that many of the companies he applied to used an online recruiting platform created by software firm Workday. The platforms called applicant tracking systems helped employers track and screen job candidates. In 2023, Mobley sued Workday, one of the largest purveyors of recruiting software, for discrimination, claiming its algorithm screened him out based on his age, race, and disabilities. Mobley, a black graduate of Morehouse College who suffers from anxiety and depression, said the math did not add up. He says he applied only for jobs he believed he was well qualified for. There's a standard bell curve in statistics. It didn't make sense that my failure rate was 100%, said Mobley, who has since gotten hired and twice promoted at Allstate. His suit is now emerging as the most significant challenge yet to the software behind nearly every hiring decision these days. Last month, after several failed challenges by Workday, a federal judge in California said Mobley's age discrimination claim could proceed for now as a collective action. The ruling seems opens the door to millions of potential claims from job seekers over the age of 40. While the judge has ruled that Workday did not intentionally discriminate against Mobley, she did leave open the door for him to prove that Workday's technology still had the effect of penalizing him because of his age. She has not addressed the race and disability claims as of yet. Mobley still has a tough case to prove, and the suit may go through years of legal wrangling. Yet the case could force Workday to part the curtains on how its algorithm scores applications, a process that has remained a black box since job searches began moving online decades ago. Hiring intermediaries that pretty much have been excused from regulation and they've escaped any legal scrutiny, I think this case will change that, said Ifeoma Ajua, who is a professor at Emory University School of Law and author of The Quantified Worker. Workday says Mobley's claims have no merit. It says its software matches keywords on resumes with the job qualifications that its employers and customers load for each role. Their scores applicants as a strong, good, fair, or low match. While employer clients can set up knockout questions that lead to automatic rejections, for example, asking if a person has legal authorization to work in the United States or is available for weekend shifts, the software is designed so that employers make the final decisions on the candidates who make it through the initial screening, Workday argued in court filings. There's no evidence out there that the technology results in harm to protected groups, the company said. Before his job search, Mobley's career path had not been smooth. He was laid off in the recession that followed the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks, and again after the housing meltdown in 2008. After that, he left finance and transitioned to what he viewed as a more recession-proof career in technology. Still, steady jobs were hard to come by. He spent a year as a contractor at IT firm HPE, hoping the stint would turn into a permanent position for him. Mobley said he was let go and later joined a lawsuit against HPE, alleging age and race discrimination. The case was settled in 2020. HPE declined to comment. That job loss led to 2 years of unemployment starting in 2017. He applied to more than 100 jobs and found himself on Workday's recruiting platform over and over. He did not get a single interview, let alone a job. Soon, Mobley felt he discerned a pattern. It dawned on me that this must be some kind of server reviewing these applications and turning me down every time. He worried that hiring software screened him out because it picked up on his age and race through details on his resume, or that it detected his anxiety and depression through personality tests he took as part of some job applications. He stayed afloat by driving for Uber and working short-term jobs. Mobley eventually did find a job the old-fashioned way. In 2019, he said, a recruiter for Allstate called him. A phone screen led to an interview with a hiring manager and then an offer. And now he is a catastrophe controller, managing the workflow of customers' property and auto damage claims. Mobley said he suspects that Workday's software flagged his profile, essentially blackballing him across its entire system, regardless of which company he applied to. Workday disputes that idea, and HR technology experts are skeptical of the theory. Employers customize recruiting software with their own criteria, they say, creating closed systems that should not theoretically speak to each other. But there is evidence out there that underlying scoring algorithms can shut out certain job seekers, said Kathleen Creel, who is a computer scientist at Northeastern University who has been following the Workday case. That might happen, she said, through mechanical errors such as misclassifying a previous job title or by incorporating more complicated algorithmic mistakes that penalize members of a single group or people with certain combinations of characteristics. Since 2022, Workday has built a team focused on ensuring its products that they meet ethical artificial intelligence standards. If Mobley does succeed, software companies and their customers may be required to do more due diligence and disclosure to ensure that they don't enshrine bias. Employment lawyers say finding of liability could open the door to job seekers also suing employers who use them. This is not a personal vendetta, Mobley said. I'm an honest, law-abiding person trying to just get a job in an honest way. And next is from the question answer column, Work Friend of the New York Times. This one from the June 19th issue of the Times. This was written by Anna Holmes. The question is, too old for a job? I own a small business and have a remote bookkeeper who works for me part-time. She began working for me in person more than a decade ago and after several years switched to working remote. She's now likely in her mid to late 70s. I have not seen her in person since before COVID, and she lives a couple of hours away from me, so an in-person meeting isn't particularly convenient for either of us. All of our correspondence is by way of email. In the past year or so, the quality of her work has slipped, and she's beginning to make small, inconsistent mistakes. I'm concerned that she is no longer mentally sharp enough to continue as a bookkeeper, and I'm not sure how to proceed, as this feels like a major accusation. I don't feel that the mistakes warrant her being fired, but the quantity of mistakes is increasing. When I point out the mistakes, I don't get much explanation, just an oops, which is becoming very frustrating. It feels inappropriate to come out and say that I think it's time for her to retire. Any advice for dealing with an elderly remote employee is greatly appreciated. The letter was written from Anonymous, and the response by Anna Holmes is, you shouldn't have to tell her to retire, and I'm not sure it's time for you to fire her either. But I'm not sure there's any other way to interpret the situation other than that her cognitive abilities appear to be slipping. Whether that's because of her age or her health matters, other distractions in her life, the result is still the same. She's messing up. You should address her increasing propensity for mistakes directly and as part of a targeted conversation. Share your concerns about the volume of her mistakes and make it clear to her that they are unacceptable, as that they can cost you money. Set up a video call with her. It will be a lot more intimate than email or phone. It's very possible that your employee is well aware of and embarrassed by her mistakes. Offer her the benefit of a doubt by having an honest conversation about your concerns. She's been working for you for a long time now. See what she says and go on from there. She might give you an easier out than you're expecting. This is all we have time for on our program on careers for today. I hope you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thanks for listening. I'm Irene Lubin, and I'm a volunteer reader. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.